You're listening to Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. Sound a little bit like a jazz improv? Maybe, but it's not music made by any human. For the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about a new genre of music that's being developed. You might call it primate music. It won't top any charts, but some scientists say it could help us understand the origins of music. It's the latest research on the musical abilities of monkeys and apes, and it shows that they use music like we do as a social way to express emotion and as a mood setter. First up, we're going to be talking about an ongoing study of some musically inclined bonobos. Researchers with the Great Ape Trust are working with four bonobos, giving them a variety of instruments and playing music alongside them. And they found that the bonobos are able to understand elements of music like pitch and rhythm and timing, and they even have their favorite instruments and their styles of music. Music they play isn't something you'd want to listen to on your way to work, maybe, but according to Patricia Gray, a musician and a biomusic researcher, it's all about the process of music making for the apes. She is clinical professor and senior research scientist of biomusic at the Music Research Institute that's at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and she's also a musician. Thanks for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Ira.
Tell me about your work. How did you get started in this?
Well, it's actually a very interesting story. I've spent a great deal of my professional life on a piano bench as a pianist and also serving as the artistic director of the resident ensemble at the National Academy of Sciences. And as you can imagine, being a musician in residence at the National Academy of Sciences provides you with a very interesting intersection between the arts and sciences. And I'm very fond of telling people who are sometimes surprised that the Academy had a resident ensemble. I like to quote Dr. Frank Press, one of the former presidents of the Academy, who was quoted as saying that he felt very strongly that we needed both the arts and the sciences in order to inform us about the whole picture of knowledge.
Let's talk about this piece of music that I just played, and maybe you can tell us what we're listening to, because I'm going to re-rack it, as they say in the business, and play the music clip again. And what is that going on there? Who was playing that?
Okay, I'm starting. I'm on a synthesizer, and Pam Benicia, who is a bonobo, she has her own synthesizer, and she has been listening to me, and I've been saying, let's play a grooming song, and then she joins in, and she starts to play her synthesizer with mine, and she gets excited, as you can hear, and every now and then kind of sings along. But what you're hearing is two individuals at their own synthesizer basically jamming together.
The bonobo's jamming with you.
That's right.
And she's keeping pace.
Well, yes. That's a very interesting part of all of this. We have been working with Pam Benicia and Kanzi. These are two of the adult bonobos that are now in residence at the Great Ape Trust for about 7 years. I started working with Kanzi and Pam Benicia when they were still at Georgia State University at the Language Research Center there. And they grew up in a very enriched environment where basically the researchers wanted to see just how far the bonobo brain could go if they had all of the advantages of human children. And so these particular bonobos, Kanzi and Pam Benicia, and now Pam Benicia's offspring, Inyota and Nathan, have been raised in a musical environment. So they are used to having radios play around them. They had people who would play music for them to go to sleep at night.
So they're really just surrounded by music all the time. Does it matter when you play with them that they hit the right notes? Is that what you're looking for? What are you looking for when they jam with you?
The whole concept of what the right notes are is a cultural decision, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, we get to be arbiters based on our own cultural experience of what sounds good. So at this juncture, what we are trying to do is measure and research what we might consider some very, very basic elements, the building blocks, so to speak, of music making. And so you'll hear me actually kind of segue from using the word music to using the word music making, or to use a term that Christopher Smallwood coined a few years back, musicking. The emphasis here being that instead of it being a product called music, we're really focused on the process. And if we look at what are the elements of the process of doing something musical with each other, regardless of our musical background or our musical culture, there are certain things that are rather ubiquitous throughout our species. And some of those things have to do with we can feel a beat and we can move in time to that beat. So that makes it possible for us to say things together, to cheerlead, to do the wave, to actually have a conversation.
And you could trace it all the way back to the bonobos.
Well,
starts early.
This rhythmic sense that we have built into our brains is a biological gift. And so there are some opportunities now with these particular bonobos to see whether it's uniquely human. And I think that a lot of people have gotten excited recently because there are indications that some of these basic rhythmic abilities, these capabilities that we're born with, may be translated into other species, such as some people may be aware of a cockatiel by the name of Snowball,
right,
who's been all over
right.
the...
Yeah.
In fact, it's on your website.
Right.
But also, we have been working with this particular group of bonobos to try to get a sense of this rhythmic sense. Do they have it? Is there synchrony? Can they actually feel a beat and engage with that beat in what we might call a multimodal way? I mean, can you clap to it? Can you move a key up and down to it? Can you play a drum to an existing external beat? That's a synchrony. Now, here's where it gets even more exciting for us, because humans can not only entrain to a beat, but we can subdivide this beat into parts. So we can go cheep, 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 ti-ti-ti-ti, or into threes, ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti-ti, so on. That's called beat entrainment. And we think that we are looking at some preliminary evidence that not only do these bonobos have the ability to entrain that big beat, but they have the ability to subdivide that beat. And that's really what you're listening to when you're listening to Pam Benicia and I improvise together.
Fascinating. We've run out of time. I want to thank you very much for taking time and sharing your music with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Patricia Gray is clinical professor and senior research scientist of biomusic at the Music Research Institute at the University of North Carolina in Greensboro. Next, we're heading not to a funky town. We're going to be heading to Monkey Town, and we're going to talk about a study published in Biology Letters showing that cottontail tamarind monkeys, still on our music theme here with primates, they respond emotionally to music so long as it's specific, special species-specific songs. Musician David Tai composed monkey music using elements of monkey calls. The tamarinds, who never showed any response to human voice, were actually excited by the aggressive music and calmed by affectionate music, sort of like, I guess, the way we are. Here to talk about it is David Tai. He's a lecturer in the School of Music at the University of Maryland, and he's a cellist in the National Symphony Orchestra. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Ira. It's great to be here.
I'm going to play, because we're running out of time, I want to play our first little bit of music that we have. And let's listen to that. Tell us what we're listening to.
This is the real-time version of some of my music that was the aggressive, the threat-based music for the Tamarinds.
So you played threat-based music for them, and did they react?
Well, what you're actually listening to, they did not react to.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the example of, this was how it sounded as I recorded it on the cello.
Okay, so you were... You recorded on the cello, and you had to speed it up or modify it for them?
That's right. Then I had I speeded it up 8 times. I took it 3 octaves higher. And then after a couple of seconds break, you'll hear the version that they heard.
Ah, there it is. Wow, and this drove them nutty.
They were bouncing off the walls.
It would drive me nutty, I would think.
Yeah, it's not what, you know, we've received some criticism and say, well, you really can't call that music, because... Before that, they had heard the monkey version, and to us, that does sound just like a bunch of scrapes, but it is in their perceptual range. That's where they communicate and where how they listen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's in A minor, a used counterpoint, standard notation.
Yeah. Let's play the other bit that you played for them. And this was... How did the monkeys react to this?
This calmed them down. It was basically a tamarind ballad. And that thumping you hear is the pace of the resting heart rate of an adult tamarind. And
you put that heart rate in because?
It's a good story, but it was interesting how Pat Gray, by the way, we played together here for years, National Musical Arts Ensemble. It was great to hear her voice again. But according to my hypothesis, that the reason we have rhythm in the senses and the foundations of all music are the womb sounds that we have heard, that the fetus can hear for 5 months, and the sounds of the heartbeat, the female voice of the voice of the mother, and the respiration, they account for all of the universal traits of music found in all cultures. And it's because the limbic structures, the emotional centers, are almost completely formed at birth in the human
brain. I get it.
Brain.
Let me just interrupt rudely and say that I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News. Sorry, go ahead again.
It's okay. our rhythm, we're kind of calibrated with that heartbeat for those 5 months. And so the way I like to think of it is that the sounds of your mother's heartbeat, breathing, and voice were permanently etched into the emotional centers of your brain. And they are the foundation of all human music.
Is there any human music that they might like?
It's possible. As it happens, there was kind of an anomaly that when we played the music of Tool, the aggressive thrash metal, of heavy metal of Tool and Metallica, it calmed them down. And basically, Chuck, who has worked as the lead author on this study, who was great to work with and a brilliant scientist, and he chalks it up to musical taste. And I love the idea that other species also have varied musical tastes.
So they're not into Mozart, if you play.
That's right. Well, there is a kind of, basically, that I could, I think there's reason for, too, the diatonic nature of Mozart's music would be something of a universal appreciation. And in fact, the calming music that are out for the tamarinds and their calming vocalizations are very diatonic. They're like major scales.
Yeah.
And their threats are dissonant. They're full of dissonant intervals. And so was my threat-based music.
So how does this add to the study of the evolution of music, what you've learned here?
Well, I think what it points to is that we have their common roots to music. When I heard one of these calls and I slowed them down, it was called SL Trill, and it was an E-flat major scale. I had the thought, and we think we invented music, that the foundations of it are natural in the natural world, but also the evolution of music as we understand it, if we can consider music to be an entirely human construct. Everything about music was built by humans for humans. It's you know, we, the musicians over the centuries, have made this thing. And when you look at it from that perspective and peel back the layers over time of which elements were added as music was developed, you're allowed to see what the emotional triggers of each of those elements were that caused emotional responses.
Do you think that they're making this music in the wild themselves or something like it?
Well, you know, I would say something like it. In a sense, I would say especially this, the Cotton Top Tamarind, the whole semantics of whether it's music or not does not so much interest me, but I can say that the elements of music are the basic elements of their communication. And when we listen to them in musical terms, we can understand them. When Chuck decided to do this study with me, I think that one of the convincing reasons, because I have absolutely no scientific credentials, but he was willing to work on the study on the basis of the strength of the ideas themselves, and he sent me two new calls, and I was a little uncomfortable, but I wrote back to him, and I said, I don't think these should be categorized as the same type of call. One sounds to me like a threat. One sounds like a normal communication between two of the same group. And he was he liked the idea that I was able to tell, and I was right about it, as it happens, was able to tell just by a kind of musical analysis what the mood of the animals who were calling was. So
wow.
I think ultimately the real story of this this study was that we have an understanding now, and we have something in common with them in musical terms. We can actually literally understand them better.
Right.
And we have a genuine contact and communication and connection with these species that we just didn't have
before. All right, David, I've run out of time. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Ira.
David Tye, cellist for the National Symphony Orchestra and lecturer at the School of Music at the University of Maryland. Greg Smith composed our theme music and will help today from NPR librarian Kim Mileski. If you want to hear more of Lawrence Krauss, who was on the show today, he and I will be continuing our discussion next week at the New School here in New York. That's next Wednesday, September 23rd. If you'd like to come join us and watch a live webcast or sit in the audience, check out our website at sciencefriday.com for details on how to come on sit in the audience and watch our webcast. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.